How's it? How are you doing? Well, hope you're having a superb sporting week. It's that time of the week again. Need I remind you for another instalment of your weekly sports podcast, Talking Point, the forum where we engage and debate with our top citizen sports journalists who keep you in the loop every day on our print and online portals. And from time to time, we also rope in some special guests. Welcome to it. My name's Trevor Cramer. Rugby still very much centre stage, still dominating the sporting conversations wherever you may find yourself. So I'm joined in studio this week again by the head of citizen sport, Jacques van der Westhuizen, always on the ball, playing off the front foot as usual, here to share some of his thoughts with us. Welcome back, Jacques.
Thanks, Trevor. Hello, everybody.
Straight to the kickoff. We're into week four of the rugby in France, the Rugby World Cup, that is. It's a crunch week where much of the mist could be lifted on who's likely to advance to the quarterfinals in 2 weeks' time. A few teams still with outside chances of making the last eight, but we should have a much clearer indication by Sunday at least, Sunday night, when the next burst of pool matches have run their course. Jacques, let's hone in as we usually do on the Springboks for starters. Before we look at the weekend ahead, let's just backtrack slightly. A close loss to Ireland, currently ranked number one in the world. It was always likely to be a two-team shootout in Pool B between the Box and Ireland, with Scotland, well, lurking there with an outside chance, providing they find the goods to beat their Six Nations rivals next week. A decent performance by most accounts, but 11 points left behind in Paris, a major underlying factor. Your thoughts, Jacques?
Yeah, it was a big match, Trevor, as we all knew it would be. You know, two great teams going at each other in that, very similar styles in a way. It was a real arm wrestle and edge of the seat stuff. You know, not a lot of points scored, but it was a really great rugby match with a lot happening. Yeah, I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head there, and I think everybody's fully aware of it now. The missed kicks at goal were crucial. It doesn't matter how we look at it or how to, you know, defend it or whatever, and it doesn't matter what the Springbok management say, but they have come out and admitted it. Those 11 points were massive. I mean, that's the win right there. So I don't think we need to look too much you know, further than that. The goal kicking is something that has to be addressed and urgently. And then the other issue that stood out for me was the Boxers, you know, lack of finishing prowess. You know, they certainly created enough chances. They got into the Irish 22-meter area on a number of occasions, and they really were only able to score that one try from a great long pass by Marnie Lubbock to Cheston Colby. But they had a number of other opportunities, and they didn't convert them. It was also strange that they kicked to the post on two or three occasions when they should rather have gone for touch and set up the line out, you know, and set up that driving maul of theirs. So a few weird tactics on the day, but a great match. And hopefully the Springboks can still qualify and get through to the quarters. And then, you know, it's all depends on what happens on the day.
I think due credit to Russie and Jacques Nienaber, very few excuses from the Bok management, barring their ongoing goal-kicking dilemma, but we'll deal with that shortly. Looking ahead now, Jacques, we've seen the match day lineup selected for the next mission. That's their final Pool B encounter against Tonga on Sunday. Traditionally a very strong physical team. No question the Boks have to win handsomely with a bonus point to go top of the group, leaving Ireland and Scotland to fight it out next week. But before we unpack the team selection, what do you expect from these Pacific Islanders? What do you think they'll bring to Marseille?
Yeah, it's always a difficult one. You know, I think Tonga and Samoa, they were probably, you know, slightly better a couple of years ago. They have been able to select a few players who previously played for the All Blacks and Australia, guys who've gone back home, so to speak, and are now playing for those countries. So they would seemingly be stronger in that, but the results at this World Cup suggest that they're not all that much stronger than they were maybe a couple of years ago and in the past, going back many years, you know. Samoa were once a very strong nation that played at the 1995 World Cup here in South Africa. They were our quarterfinal opponents in 1995. So, you know, I don't think they've really built on that foundation. And Tonga have always struggled. They really haven't hit the same heights as Fiji and Samoa. So I don't think they'll give us too many problems on Sunday. They'll be physical up front. They'll be hard. They'll have a couple of guys, you know, running hard and tackling hard in that. But I think over the course of the 80 minutes, I think the Springboks' strength and you know, all-round ability will probably just be too strong for Tonga.
Onto the team, another indication of the vast depth of the Springbok squad. 12 changes from the Island game. Three players, Sia Kolisi, Eben Netzebet and Jasper Visser, retained in the run-on side. Dwayne Vermeulen starts on the flank. Dion Fourie at hooker. A massive call at fly half where Andre Pollard is back. Back to a more traditional split of 5-3 forwards to backs. That's on the bench. Very few injuries, thankfully, so far. Evidence of a good squad rotation policy. But the big one, we alluded to it earlier, the critical fly half position. Pollard back in the number 10 jersey. Your views and having a look at the team briefly.
Yeah, I mean, Pollard was always going to come back. Once he had been selected, this was always going to be the game that he would play. You know, it's a tricky one for me. I don't really know what to make of the recall of Pollard. I understand their goal-kicking issues in the team. But for me, Marnie Lubbock's general play has been outstanding. I've always been a fan of his. I've said that before. I think he's turned the Springbok backline into a really threatening unit, and he plays so well, and he really is an attacking threat there at a number 10. But his goal-kicking has let him down. So the Springboks are hoping that with Pollard back, the kicking will improve. We don't know. We'll have to wait and see whether that actually happens. The biggest issue is that Pollard hasn't played competitive rugby for so long now. How is he going to stand up against a team like Tonga, and how is he going to stand up in the next time the Boks play in the quarterfinals and the other knockouts, if we get that far? And that is all to say, if Pollard gets picked at number 10. He needs to have a run so that everybody can see, you know, what form he's in, what shape he's in, whether he can go 40, 50 minutes. Marnie Lubbock is on the bench. As some sort of insurance policy, and I'm sure when the game opens up later on, Lubbock will come on. But yeah, I think, you know, it's not an issue around general fly half play, so that's not the concern. The biggest concern is the goal kicking. If Marnie Lubbock had been converting all his kicks, I don't even know if they would have considered bringing Pollard back into the setup. That's the biggest thing. So for me, you know, it's a bit worrying that we're so you know, concerned about one aspect, and we've brought a guy in just to address the one issue. I would have liked last week, for example, to have rather seen Damian Willemse, for example, taking the goal kicks from the very beginning and not let Lubbock take a kick at all and see how Willemse goes, or for that matter, Fuff or Cheslin Colby. They have kicked before, but I think they should have rather taken a decision, you know, straight away in the week and said to Marnie, you know, don't worry about kicking, just play your game and take that pressure off him. You know, the other issue for me with Pollard coming in, you know, how has that affected the dynamic among the backs? Does Marnie Lubbock all of a sudden feel more pressure and under threat? Will he try and play differently to what he's used to and how he normally plays? All of those types of little things start creeping into a player's mind as well. So let's see how it goes. Fortunately, it is Tonga, as I said, a team that shouldn't give us too many issues, so the box should be fine. But yeah, everybody obviously excited and curious to see how Andre Pollard goes.
Now, Jacques, you actually compiled a fascinating statistical analysis of the Springboks kicking woes during the week. Go check it out. Feel free to on the citizen.co.za. Barring Lubbock's kicking problems, as you say, he doesn't deserve the criticism leveled at him on social media. It's emotionally driven and grossly unfair. But going forward now, do you feel he may just suffer a bit of a confidence crisis, or dare I maybe even suggest, like most other teams, almost the norm these days, why not rope in a specialist kicking coach perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, we can discuss that, you know, for hours if we really had to. The Boks don't have a specialist kicking coach. I know that Marnie Lubbock is in constant contact with his kicking coach at the Stormers, Gareth Wright. So that's the guy who he turns to whenever he needs, you know, some sort of guidance or when he feels he needs to tweak something in his kicking. So they're in close communication, and I've got no issue with that. It's the guy that he feels comfortable with. And often when you bring in a secondary coach at a national level, he can confuse things and complicate things. So I've got no problem with the situation as it is. But yeah, you know, obviously Marnie feels disappointed, and he feels as if he's let the team down by missing those kicks. And when those sort of things happen, they can definitely impact a player's general feeling and general confidence level. And let's hope that that doesn't happen. You know, like I said just a few minutes ago, I think it would help Marnie Leebok if somebody else in the team was appointed as kicker from the start and take that away from him completely. We saw in 2007 when we won the World Cup under Jake White, Butch James was the fly half, but he never kicked a goal ever. You know, Percy Montgomery handled those duties and Butch could just concentrate on playing and be the tackler, the carrier, the distributor, and Percy handled that. There's no reason why a guy like Damian Willemse can't take those kicks and do it from the beginning or one of the other players and let them train that way in the week so that they know that that is part of their responsibility for that specific match.
And Butch, of course, if we recall, sometimes forgot that he had hands.
Mm-hmm.
Broadening the discussion a bit beyond the box, it's been a fascinating 4 weeks in France. Something standing out for me is the perceived mediocrity of New Zealand and Australian rugby at the moment, but more specifically Australia, neither shooting the lights out really, much dependent on the All Blacks game against Italy on Saturday. The Wallabies, who should never struggle against Minnows Portugal, they need a backdoor opening from Fiji, who played Georgia also on Saturday. As far as our group goes, the burning question probably is if Scotland can get the better of Ireland next week. France and Wales already through, England cruising. Jacques, the primary contenders are emerging, but there's still a bit to play for.
Yeah, there's a lot to play for still. You know, as you say, I think the top teams will eventually all emerge and qualify in that. For some teams like the South Africans, you know, they'll get to a quarterfinal stage with some big games behind them and be really battle-hardened and up for the challenges that lie ahead, where some other teams might be, you know, get to that stage, having cruised to that stage, as you say, and not have had the same similar type of intensity and physicality in their matches. So that's going to be an interesting point once we get to the quarterfinals. But, you know, all those top teams, as we suspected and as we knew before the time, they will eventually always emerge out of those pools. It is going to be interesting, though, to see if the Wallabies actually make it through or not. It doesn't look like it at this stage. But, yeah, that would be the biggest shock of all, though, if the Wallabies didn't make it.
That's where we'll pretty much wrap our rugby discussion for now. Dual focus from next week. It's going to be tricky when the 50-over Cricket World Cup gets underway in India. Lots to talk about and certainly looking forward to that as well. But before we blow the final whistle on this week's installment of Talking Point, as always, it's that part of the show where we hand out our awards for the weekly Flop and Gold Star of the Week. My Flop of the Week, almost a recurring award for the past few weeks, it goes to Eddie Jones and his hapless Wallabies, mate. Despite being humiliated and clobbered 46 by Warren Gatland's Wales on the brink of elimination from the World Cup, Wallabies coach Eddie Jones, he just continues talking up his charges, even to the point of ridiculously suggesting or thinking they can still win the World Cup. For me, a weekly dose of comedy. Eddie, we'll miss you. And my gold star, that goes to, well, we may not know him, but he's a 19-year-old cricketer from Nepal. His name, Kushai Mala. He chalked up a century off just 34 balls, the fastest ever T20 international ton, but that was against Mongolia at the Asian Games as Nepal bludgeoned 314 for 3, beating the previous highest T20 international score of 278 for 3, and that was by Afghanistan against Ireland in 2019. A number of other T20 international records also shattered in that game. So well done to Kushai Mala, but I still say that there should be a distinction between the various tiers, because now some high-profile cricketers who have legitimate records in some tough cricket games, their records are now cast from the slate, and a player like Kushai Mala against absolutely minimal opposition holds all those records in cricket folklore, and some of them are almost impossible to erase. Jacques, where are you leaning?
Yeah, I'm going to have to unfortunately give this flop of the week to the Springboks' goal kickers. like I said previously, I'm a big fan of Marnie Leebox, but it really has cost the Boks now in a big match. Hopefully it doesn't cost them, further on in the tournament at the World Cup, but the goal kicking has been a major concern, and it's disappointing. And the kicks that he did have were not too difficult. Faf de Klerk also missed two, which was disappointing. So my flop goes to the general goal kicking situation in the Springbok team. I think it really could have been handled better by now. Some solution could have been reached and come up with, but I have spoken about that. And then my gold star this week goes to Tegist Sefa, the runner who beat, who won the Berlin Women's Race Marathon on Sunday. She set a new world record. It's her first race of 2023. She shattered that record by over 2 minutes, Bridget Koskaj's previous world mark, and it was a phenomenal race if you watched it. Obviously, Eliud Kipchoge also won the men's event, but it was really Sefa that stole the limelight in Berlin last weekend with a magnificent run.
That's where we'll wrap it. You have yourself a great sporting week ahead with the Citizen as your constant companion, both online and in print. Jacques van der Westhuizen, head of Citizen Sport, thanks as always for joining us, sharing your wealth of knowledge with us. My name's Trevor Kramer. This has been Talking Point. You'll find us on citizen.co.za. Click on multimedia. It's in the subsection podcasts. Or why not follow Citizen News on Iono FM. You'll find the podcast on the Citizen's YouTube channel. Remember this, it's an old saying. The bad news is that time flies, but the good news is that you are the pilot. Have a great sporting weekend. From me, take care. Cheers.